Hi, my name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to bring you today's webinar on negotiating tactics. Getting someone on the phone in today's world is definitely half the battle, but the other half happens once someone on the other end of the line picks up. Being an effective and persuasive negotiator is an important component of being an effective collector, and we're fortunate to have a pair of negotiating pros with us today to share their insights and advice. This webinar is being generously sponsored by Microbuilt. You'll get the chance to hear more about them a little later in our program. I wanted to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform, my mother tells me. I hope you all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Let me tell you a little bit now about today's speakers. Donna Nicholson-Steef is Executive Director and Chief Compliance Officer at the Credit Bureau of Lancaster County, Inc. Collection Services Division, where she oversees financial and operational functions. In addition to working at the Credit Bureau of Lancaster County, Donna serves the collection industry as President of the Mid-Atlantic Collectors Association, as well as on the Special Committee on Small Agencies and the Council of Delegates for ACA International. She previously served on ACA International's Audit Financial Review Committee and ACA International Board of Director for 8 years. She was a recipient of ACA's Unit Leader of the Year Award in 2010. Greg Ruffino is the Director of Training at Williams & Fudge. Greg has worked at Williams & Fudge for the past 8 years, starting as a collector and working his way up the ladder to Director of Training. Greg recently spoke at ACA International's conference on the topic of training. He's a certified training specialist with ACA International. Unfortunately, Roger Weiss had a conflict and will not be able to participate today. The format for today's webinar will be a discussion moderated by myself. We encourage everybody to submit questions and we'll get to them when the discussion has concluded. If you submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded and a recording of this event will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. With that, let's launch into today's discussion. And Donna will give you the honor of the first question. Actually, Donna first, and then Greg, I'd like you to follow. What kind of training do you provide collectors with respect to negotiating with individuals while on the phone?
Okay. So I think Greg and I are going to do a great job without Roger Weiss, but we do miss him.
Absolutely.
One of the things with negotiating, and when you're training, you're really going into a lot of what not to do, what not to say, because of all of the compliance and things like that. The fun part is when you get to negotiating, because when you get to training on negotiating tactics, that's where you can really dive into all of the things that you should be doing and should be saying. So one thing that we here feel that helps a new collector is to role play. We do a ton of role playing. And in addition to that, anytime a collector has a really, really super stellar phone call, we save that recording for training. And we also do a mock recorded call. So myself and our trainer, I'll be the collector, she'll be the debtor, and we'll do a mock recorded call on all of the different ways to negotiate and different scenarios. And then we also have some examples of the what not to do. And we ask the new collector, like, tell us why you think this technique didn't work versus all of the other ones that you heard. So role playing and listening to recorded calls is, I think, really helps a new collector.
I agree, of course. Those are tried and true methods. And hello, everyone. This is Greg. Thanks for being with us. We are big as well, Donna, on the recording aspect of it. We have dabbled in the role-playing field. It's something I honestly think we should do more of or get better at. I think I failed in the past at initiating some role-calling stuff because if you don't handle it right, your staff might find the corniness in it or find it hard to take serious. But if it's done right, it's a great way for your peer-to-peers to interact and to have your collector experts help teach some of the newer individuals. But we are big here on call recordings and soliciting for them, saving them, and building them into all different kinds of our training materials, from the newest collectors to the most tenured types. We also do a lot of job shadowing, which is kind of a mix between role-playing and recordings in a sense. And this is particularly for a newer hire employee and someone who might have been here for a while that is now maybe just struggling. Well, we'll match them up with someone who does the job really well, is a proven negotiator, and they'll shadow them with a headset so they're hearing both sides of the conversation, watching that person work live and in the moment. The experienced tenured collector is able to put the consumer on a mute or a hold at certain points of time and explain why they're doing a certain thing. So they're kind of getting a real live aspect. The recordings are great because you can find the most perfect call scenarios. You can even find ones that weren't successful. But we like the live shadowing as well, because you're seeing how to do it when you're multitasking, you're thinking on your feet, when you're kind of listening to just calls or just kind of role playing. It's a half real scenario. Real things are happening, or potentially real things, but you're not necessarily feeling the same pressure of responding in the right amount of time. But I do want to mention this tool when you specifically mention what kind of training or what kind of tools. We use a very simple financial calculator or payment calculator, however you want to label it. And really all that is a spreadsheet. It's a simple spreadsheet that you fill in what the balance is, and it's going to pre-populate a whole bunch of different cells with what the bi-weekly payments are, how much the pay monthly payment is for 3, 6, 9, 12 months, and so on. It allows for percentages down. You can account for any kind of interest rates associated. So a collector can easily put in, if Ms. Consumer here owes $1,512.38, can plug that number in, and without having to continuously run new numbers on their calculator or using a sheet of paper and scratching their head, they're going to have 20 options right there instantly populated into an Excel spreadsheet that's going to help them rattle off numbers a lot quicker. And the quicker and more savvy, more witty and you are with the consumer, the more likely that you're going to be able to touch base with them. So that's one of the biggest tools we use, is getting them used to using a simple spreadsheet payment calculator.
I love that, the calculator. We do something similar. And the other thing that the calculator helps the collector to decide is really how long it's going to take the debtor to pay off. Because sometimes if the debtor's hung up on the money and you're not getting anywhere, you can kind of move the conversation over to, well, how much time do you think you might need to pay this off? And it, using that calculator will tell you that. With the job shadowing, with the proven collector, a proven negotiator, that's excellent because, and you're right, the seasoned collector can multitask and hit mute and explain things as they're going. And that's a real life scenario, and you have to think on your feet. With the role playing, you can really throw a collector off their game a little bit, which is good because you want them to get used to what the answer should be and how to think on their feet. So.
Yeah, and a few other things too is depending on your agency and your clients and their expectations in your hiring and who you're hiring and whatnot, it's very common and expected in the industry that a lot of people you're onboarding probably don't have experience at all in this field, or very little of the experience. So most other jobs out there, there's not a whole lot of negotiating going on unless you come from the car sales industry or something similar to that effect. So yeah, this is one of the biggest things, in addition to learning the different federal and state laws. You know, people have been talking to each other their entire lives. They've proven that they can have a conversation. Otherwise you probably wouldn't have hired them. The negotiating thing is something that even myself, I'm still trying to learn something new all the time. My ears are always to the ground, learning new ways and techniques to negotiate. But this is an incredibly important topic, and it's one that is ongoing. I think some of the series of questions we'll have coming up from Mike is going to talk about some of the ongoing training. But this is something that you're not going to get an expert your first week of hiring somebody. At least you should not be expecting that. It's a continuous process, and it's one of those topics that you should always be re-exploring with your tenured folks, no matter what the situation.
Excellent advice, Greg.
Yes, absolutely. Sorry, I'm just trying to catch up with my notes here. That's an awesome start. With respect to using the call recordings, are you screening all the recordings to sort of listen for those good ones that you want to include in your training, or are you still just sort of listening to a sample and hoping maybe you get lucky that you're going to find one that you can, you know, add into your training program?
So I'll jump that one there, Mike. I wish I had the time in the day to just randomly listen to calls all day long. That's just certainly not the case. I don't care how big your shop is. There's too many calls going out and too many conversations probably happening. We do have some voice analytics software that we use, particularly on the compliance side, that does scan for certain things, and it does have certain abilities. But even with that, it's very inefficient. I just use something extremely simple in that our staff knows that we're always training it. Every now and then we put ticklers out there that says, hey, who wants to be a rock star? We're putting new training together. Who wants to hear we want to hear some good negotiating calls. And of course, not everyone's going to respond. You're going to get some responses that don't necessarily meet the criteria you're looking for. But when I see an email from a trusted, true, tenured collector who I know does a great job negotiating, and they tell me in an email, hey, pull up this account on this date, listen to this call, I'm 90-some% certain that I'm going to get the goods that I'm looking for. And they're not doing any extra work on their end. They just read an email from me saying, hey, next time you feel like you have a great negotiation and you don't care to share it, let us know. And that just opens up the floodgates. And from there, I probably do that 3-4 times a year when I just need to get things fresh and play new calls. And that's my best response, is going to tried and true pockets of people and say, give me some good calls. And within a day or two, I'll have an inundation of emails with examples to go through.
We do the exact same thing, Greg. We record calls. We always record all calls. What we do is we tell the collectors, look, if you've got a really, really great one that you think that, you know, would serve a new collector well in training, just let me know. Date and time, I'll find it, or they'll give me the account number, and we'll use that in training. And the other thing that we were discussing earlier is ongoing training once the collector is on the floor. So we all have kind of that boardroom type training, the initial 2 weeks, but then once they're released to the floor, that period, I would say, for about 4 weeks, is absolutely the most critical time when that brand new collector is on the floor. Because if you think of it like this, think of it like the cement hasn't dried yet. So you spent 2 weeks with them on everything, the law, negotiating, navigating your system, learning the software. But all of that foundation, it is not dry yet. The cement hasn't dried yet. And so the first 4 weeks is when either really good habits are going to form or really bad habits are going to form. And so we monitor that brand new collector very, very closely every day. What are they doing? What accounts are they linking together? What dispos are they using? Are they giving themselves credit for accounts properly? And are they negotiating the way we trained them to do? Because like Greg said, they're not used to negotiating. This is a job where you really learn how to negotiate. And unless you came from a sales background, you really don't know that skill. So once they're on the floor, everyone, I really recommend making sure the cement dries the right way. So what do you think, Greg?
I love the cement analogy. I don't bring a lot of analogies, but I think I need to. I just picked that one up from you. I'm going to earmark that for later use. Thank you very much.
You got it.
But I want to give a quick shout out because someone in my office is listening. And his name is Bob Dunkel. Some of you might know him. He's my compliance officer and ombudsman. He's sending me a Wim Pop, and he's giving me some good talking material here. So I got to give credit where credit's due. So hello, Bob. So he's mentioning to me to make sure that I remember that we just talk about listening to good calls and soliciting good calls. And one thing you're not going to get is soliciting from people that says, hey, send me your bad calls. All right? No one wants to do that. No one wants to admit, hey, man, you should listen to this call. I really screwed the pooch on this one. No, but one of the training items, particularly with the newer individuals, is you should be hopefully doing call audits pretty quickly right off the bat, as in live trainer, manager, one-on-one or small groups with some of your new hire people. And you're going to say, hey, we're going to listen to the calls that you got paid on. I mean, you can listen to all kinds of calls, listening for certain things, but you should be listening to say, hey, let's listen to a couple of calls that you got paid on in this last week, this last few days. So those calls will be really easy to find. And you're going to listen to those calls and say, oh, I see here that you ended up at, you know, the typical $50 a month or whatever. And in that call, you might find what is the equivalent of bad negotiations from all other standards, keeping in mind that this is a new hire individual who's learning. But you might find call examples that really are terrible examples of how to go forward in negotiating, where anyone else listening to that call would have said that guy would have paid that in full, or this person could have gave you $412 a month, or this person could have got the money from mom, whatever the case is. So we will find calls or quote unquote bad calls or calls that are leaving meat on the bone, and I'll earmark those for later use in time. And again, I'm not trying to embarrass anyone at a later date in time. I whenever I play calls in training sessions, I will edit the calls out for content using very simple software. I think whatever tool I got for free, just downloaded it, and you can cut and paste some of the audio. So I'll cut people's names out. I'll cut identifiable information out just so you're hearing the phrases and some of the important aspects, but I'll play bad calls as well, just as a reference of, I bet a lot of you have said this before. A lot of you have done this before. Here's things to avoid, and then sandwich that in with, here is another example, but doing it the other way, and here's how it works better. So I think not being afraid of hearing the bad as well. You just might have to go a different way about finding the bad calls, but individual audits, one-on-one audits, let them know this was good for a certain reason, this was bad for a certain reason, but save the bad calls as well, and you can use those to get a lot of train juice somewhere down the road.
I agree. I think when a collector hears their own voice, when they hear their own recording, sometimes they'll answer the question. They'll point it out themselves. Yeah, that's where I screwed up. And one of the things we do when we meet with the collectors is we play good calls and bad calls, and we make it very clear in every single meeting that the purpose is to learn and grow. This is not to shame anybody. And all of us have had bad calls. So nobody's on the hot seat. It's just, let's learn. And it might be a bad call, might be your bad call that we're listening to next week. So it kind of sets the stage that we're not picking on anybody. But I find it interesting that when you do it in a peer setting, they don't need me there telling them what they could have done better. Your own peers will tell you, hey, if you tried this or if you tried that, that would, and it's very effective, because I think that one collector is more inclined to listen to another collector that's trying to help them. So it's not just the trainer or just me pointing things out.
Yeah, there's so many different things we can do with training, and it's one thing, it's like the mom or dad syndrome with the teenage kid, where your mom or dad keeps telling you the same thing and you're getting sick of hearing it. And every now and then you need the cool aunt or uncle to come into the room and set you straight. You know, and it's the same thing with training. Your same manager, your team leader is just saying the same thing. You're like, ah, mom, get off my back. Every now and then you need the cool aunt or uncle, which could be the, you know, one of the popular tenured big money type collectors who's willing to help come in and lead a session, or maybe you just have a small group of peer review, where we've done that, where a manager might lead it, but they say little to nothing. They're just queuing up a call and queuing up a conversation, and you have a table of three or four people who are obviously politely and trying to help each other, but critique each other, with the manager having very little involvement, just kind of steering the ship in the right direction.
Yeah.
But you pick up different things that way.
Absolutely. One of the questions Mike had asked a little earlier was, how aggressive do you want your collectors to be when negotiating with individuals? And so aggressiveness or the style of negotiating comes up a lot when we're talking about training. I think aggressive has a negative connotation to it. And so rather than, we used to say aggressive, but we've replaced it in the name of compliance and kind of sticking on track with that. We've replaced that word with persistence. And so I tell the collectors, look, you can be firm and persistent and as nice as apple pie all at the same time. I want the collector to sound like they actually want the account to be paid. So without being rude or without being insensitive or pushy, what I listen for in negotiation is, does it sound like the collector really wants this resolved? You're going to know that just in their tone. So one of the other things that we do, and I think the debtor really likes this. Part of our negotiating skills is to give the debtor options. And Mike, Greg, you mentioned that earlier with the payment calculator. Let the debtor choose between payment plan A or payment plan B. Both payment plans should be good and benefit the client and the collector. But when the debtor feels they have a choice, they feel like they're more in control, even though you are really the one in control. So in negotiating, we train our collectors to be firm. You know, don't let the debtor take control of the call, but be very respectful, be very friendly, and have a spirit of wanting to resolve it, and that you're trying to help the debtor resolve it, and let the debtor have some choices. What do you think, Greg? Yeah.
I think I like your take on that. Again, everyone's agency is going to have their own risk tolerance, compliance standards, client expectations. In our shop here, we would probably wear a very conservative hat as far as speaking to the consumer this day and age. You know, maybe 10, 15 years ago, my comments on that might be different. But in 2018, we're going to be very risk adverse. I might replace the word aggressive with assertive. You just used another word. I forget what it was, but it was not aggressive, but it means the same thing. So yeah. I don't know about you, but I can't think of the last time I willingly, voluntarily, or involuntarily gave a dime of my hard-earned money to a single person who was being what you could deem aggressive with me. There might be a situation out there where maybe the consumer or I didn't have an actual choice in the matter, but I would never voluntarily give my dime to somebody who I came across as being aggressive with me or my spouse. So you mentioned tone, Donna, I'm careful when I say this in training. I tell people it's not necessarily what you say, which you should be careful with that statement because it could be, but the bottom line is it's honestly more about how you say it, the tone and how you say it. And when it comes to if you're aggressive or not, I think there's so much context behind the situation that needs to be explained and is very individual. So we would look at like, how long has the account been in this office? How many times have we spoken to you in the past? Did you express anything to me that referenced that you have to get this paid off as soon as possible? Maybe you need it paid off to achieve services from that business. Maybe you need it off your credit report for a certain reason. If we know certain things, yeah, you can elevate your level of assertiveness. But if you have an individual on the other end of the line who's telling you this bill is not important, they have no means to pay it right now, there's technically no negative consequences to them other than some phone calls during the week, what is being aggressive going to do to that person? You're just going to scare them off and make collecting that harder, and you're going to be spinning your wheels, wasting time and money. So I think as long as you're always projecting an image and trying to be honest with that image that, look, man, we're here to help. These are the options based on your individual specific situation. Again, the length of time it's been here, the amount, how many times we've talked to you, certain credit reporting or legal things on the horizon. Here are the options I can work with you on. I'm here to help you. And I think replacing assertive based on the situation over aggressive is going to attract a lot more paying and willing consumers than having an old school debt collection aggressive kind of thing. And I have people in my office that have been here 20 plus years who thrived on that back in the day, and we're still trying to inch their boat in the right direction, who back in the day made all their money on being the heavy-handed bill collector. and it's just not the same world anymore. And we're getting them turned around slowly but surely.
Right, you're wrong. At this point, I'll let you get to it one second. At this point, I just wanted to pause the discussion just for a minute and talk a little bit about the sponsor of today's webinar, Microbuilt. For more than 35 years, Microbuilt has been helping businesses assess and manage risk. They were a pioneer in the now exploding alternative credit data space, and as such have refined their products and services to deliver true business value. Over the years, Microbuilt has invested heavily in acquiring best-in-class data. They've built sophisticated systems for keeping their data fresh and accurate, and powerful predictive models for making decisions around lending, leasing, collections, and risk management. With Microbuilt, you can customize the products you need and how much you want to spend, and all their products are provided through a single, simple access portal. Whether you're working in originations or debt collection, screening a potential hire or tenant, planning for growth, or keeping up with regulatory requirements, Microbuilt can be your partner, providing the insight and information you need to protect your business, grow your bottom line, and keep your company running smoothly. For more information, please contact Microbuilt at 1-800-884-4747 or visit www.microbuilt.com, and that's spelled MICROBILT, microbuilt.com. Thanks again to Microbuilt for sponsoring today's webinar. And with that, let's pick up with our discussion. Don, I wanted to circle back to something you said before, which you put really well, talking about being firm and persistent and nice as apple pie all at the same time. I was wondering if there was some way you could convey an example of that, or how a collector might sort of take that approach.
Okay. So I kind of think about, well, how do I pay my bills? You know, my mortgage company doesn't say, hey, Donna, do you think you could pay X on this date? Oh, you can't? Oh, well, how about this date? You know, that doesn't happen. You know, your mortgage company, your landlord, your car payment, your credit card payment, they tell you how much you owe and when you owe it, period. And so one of the things that I think a collector can get themselves into a sticky situation is when they're giving too much over to the debtor instead of being firm with what your company's policies are. So for example, we try to get as many payments in early by the fifth calendar day of every month. We try to get the majority of our payment plans in the door by the fifth day of the month. So one of the things we'll say is, I'm so glad that you are interested in paying your bill with me. We're working out a payment plan. I'm happy to do that for you. Our due dates are between the first and the fifth. Which day works best for you? And then if the debtor's like, oh, I can't, it's got to be, you know, whatever date, then the collector says, let me see what I can do for you and see if I can override our own policy to see if I can make that work for you. And then they get back on and they change the date and they'll say something to the effect, well, we're outside of the due date and I'm glad we could get that for you. It's going to bump your monthly payment plan up by $5. But you know, we're getting you the date that you want. So how does that sound better to you? And so you're being very friendly, you're being very nice, but you're sticking with your policy and you're sticking within your rules. Did that
I'm here
help?
To learn too. I'm here to learn too. I just picked that up from you. I like that. With the hour payment dates are between the first and the fifth, what works best for you. I wrote that down. So thank you for that one.
Sure.
But just to give a comparison, because obviously lots of agencies and lots of policies and whatnot. If we have, excuse me, give me one sec. Pardon me there. If we have someone going into a payment plan, that more than likely means that they have a source of income, more than likely. So we would make sure that we had a good understanding of when that money was actually coming into their checking account, right?
Right.
So we would say, when do you get paid? Oh, I get paid on the 1st and the 15th. Okay. So instead of saying we only accept payments on certain days, we'd say, oh, let's make sure we get the payment around that date. So we are capturing that payment right as soon as you're getting that money and you don't go out and spend it and then bounce your check. The one thing we would do is if someone were to tell us, hey, I want this payment on the 30th or the 31st or the 27th or the 25th, based on our policies and our clients, we're going to obviously accept the payment anytime in that given month, but our talk off and our negotiation would be, hey, we'd really prefer that to be before the 20th of the month. In the event you have to change a payment, in the event you have to cancel it, in the event that a payment declines or bounces, we should have enough time for the rest of the month to reschedule or to get it back and accounted for. So we do our best to avoid the last week of the month and mostly build our dates around when it is specifically the individual is getting paid.
That's exactly right, because here's the thing that a new or any collector, you don't want a collector to be under the gun every single month feeling unnecessary stress with hitting their numbers. So yep. if you're, you know, very close to hitting the next level, the next higher bonus, and you're banking on that those payments that are coming in on the 31st and one of them declines and you don't hit, no, that's just not a good setup. So, you know, we always start with between the 1st and the 5th because, one, very early in the month, you get a really good head start. So it's encouraging. Two, if it does decline or there's an NSF, you have 3 weeks to try to track that person down. And also, if a debtor can't, like you said, the 1st or the 5th is just the starting point. Asking for the balance in full is just the starting point. You get into negotiating, and that doesn't mean I said this and they said that and that was the end. Usually it's a little bit of a friendly back and forth until you land where you and the debtor both agree. And you said something earlier, Greg, about a debtor that maybe isn't very interested. And we've all had those calls where the debtor is aloof, they're not interested, you're getting that feeling on the phone that they could care less. One of the questions we'll ask is, what are your intentions?
Yes.
I don't want to keep calling you if you don't want me to. What are your intentions so that we can move forward because I am here to help? And so that's I think asking what the debtor's intentions are when you get, if you're getting to that point, is a good way to handle somebody that just seems to be, you know, la 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 about paying their bill and they're not really serious about it.
I absolutely love that word, and you might get other opinions on that, but I love it when it's mentioned at the appropriate time. You might have a quote along the lines of, I understand that we're not going to take care of the bill today. That's fine. One of my jobs is to take accurate notes for my client to know what's happening on this account. And I don't want to make any assumptions. Can you just kind of explain to me what your intentions are and when those intentions will come together so I can accurately notate this account? Perfect. And then allowing them to answer that gives them a little bit of accountability or a little bit of an insight about what their actual intentions are. Because most, not everyone, but most people who understand they have a bill, they don't want that bill and they want it to be taken care of to some capacity. Most people are going to want that bill to be taken care of the right way. We just probably don't have the right timing right now. And yeah, I know I need to pay it, sir. Just this month and next month is not looking too good for me. I do have intentions to pay it. Well, now that I know what your intentions are, I know how to spend my time and energy, and you might be worth revisiting, but yeah. I can know how to save my time and energy. But Donna, you just mentioned something that, you know, we're 35 minutes into this and we haven't even mentioned it yet when it comes to negotiating, is what some would call, or myself would agree with, is the number one rule, or at least one of the number one rules, and that is the expectation that payment in full is due from the beginning. The beginning of the conversation, you should, and I would assume that most clients, no matter what sector you're in, once it hits collections, they're ready for that whole balance to come back. And we're representing that client, or whether it's your agency that has the paper now, you want full restitution on it. Setting the bar high is the number one thing in negotiating because it's almost impossible to negotiate your way up. Very easy to negotiate your way down into a settlement or monthly payments or down payments and then installments. But you should be from the very beginning asking for that payment in full. That is the expectation. And if it comes off that they can't do that, and they want payment arrangements, then you can go back to what Donna just said and says, hey, I understand that you can't pay this balance in full. We're going to extend you the courtesy of working with you on a payment arrangement. We like our payments to be handled within the first 5 days of the month. Which one works best for you? You know, and you sandwich all that stuff together. It's a win for the consumer.
And you are exactly right. You have to start at the starting point. And balance in full, balance in full is due in my office. How will you be taking care of that today? Is really kind of the opening line. And the collector, here's the thing. Collectors, they get a little bit too much inside of their own head. And they're thinking, well, yeah, I don't have $5,000, so certainly the debtor must not have $5,000. And they feel silly saying, we have a $5,000 balance, it's due in full in my office today. You have to train your collectors that it's not even about whether they have it or not. It's actually arrogant to assume they don't. What you really want to do is just tell the truth. The truth is, it was due in full before it got in your office. So now you don't say it, but that's the truth. So when you're talking to the debtor, you have to say the truth. We have a balance of $5,000 that's due in our office today. How will you be taking care of that with me? Now, here's what happens. A lot of collectors, they think it's one or the other. It's either the payment in full or a payment plan. But really, there's a middle part. What about half now, half later? What about how much can you put down today to lower the balance so that we have more options with a monthly payoff? So we try to really get our collectors, you know, forget the payment plan. That's the last resort is an even monthly payment plan. You should at least be trying to get a down payment or trying to get maybe half of it now and half of it later. And also, when the debtor says, well, I don't have the balance in full, well, what do they mean? You don't have it today? Or are you going to have it later? The collector has to ask those questions. Hey, thank you for sharing that with me. I appreciate you don't have the $5,000 today. Are you saying there's a better date for you? And the debtor says, no, I just don't have $5,000. Can you take a payment plan? And that's when you get into the down payment and, you know, other, you know, there's a middle area there. You don't just want to do balance in full or even monthly payment plan.
Completely agree. And one of the questions that we've been prepped with, at least as potential topics, is what we're kind of getting into now is whoever mentions the first number loses. I would say beyond the balance in full, should be coming from the collector's mouth is the expectation, but that's not the negotiation secondary number. It's really the second number. So if I tell you my client is needing payment due in full, how can I help you with that? And you get met with a decline, I would agree that I, as the collector, should not be immediately dropping a second number.
That's exactly right.
And Donna's kind of just mentioned that. So to agree with some of the statements you just said, well, how much time do you need, or what do you have available today, or who can help you get to that balance? And while making these statements, so you're not coming off as the aggressive type, say, look, part of my job is to help you get this out of collections as efficiently as possible. Right? Now I'm building a pitch in your head that it's okay, balance is due in full, but I understand you can't pay it all, perhaps. My next goal is to help you find a way to get it out of here as fast as possible. How much time do you need to get it out of here? How much do you have today to put down on it? Who can help you achieve that? All those kind of questions come after that, and let them make a secondary offer. And here's something I want to at least make sure that comes out of my mouth that I hear in our training and our audits. And you definitely want to make sure that you have collectors that are not telling somebody no, or they're not kicking them when they make an offer. So if I say, sir, you owe $1,000 today, my client expects that to be paid in full, how can I help you process that? And they say, I can't pay $1,000, I'll give you $50 a month. The last thing I think you should do as a good negotiator and a good collector is say, well, that's not enough. Or no, I can't accept that on a balance this size, or anything negative, whatever that statement's gonna be. Don't give somebody a negative. That's a win in your book. That person is, one, acknowledging their debt. Two, they're not disputing it. Three, they must have some form of income or source of income. And four, they're offering to give you a piece of it. Those are all wins. Yes, $50 a month is not ideal, but you just got 4 wins in a row. They gave you a positive. Don't kick them and tell them that their offer is not good enough or it's a terrible offer. Say, thank you so much for that offer. Let me see how I can work with you on that. And then go from there. Obviously, you need to, you went high, they went as low as possible. And you got to get back up a little bit, but that's a great start in the right direction. I see a lot of people sour the mood and come across as aggressive when they get an offer, albeit a low one, and they kind of slap the consumer around for making too low of an offer. I'd say, thank you so much for that offer. Let me see what I can do to work with these numbers. And then go on and ask a couple more questions about their income and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it any better. Rule number one, other than asking for the balance in full, you never suggest the payment plan offer. You never throw out the first number. It's kind of like playing poker. I don't play poker, but but I know the game. I know what the game's about. And you don't show your cards. You got to kind of have a little bit of a poker face. You as the collector can go in any direction that your policies let you go in. But there really is a wrong way to collect. And if the debtor says, you know, that they can't pay in full, you don't say, well, could you do 50 a month? And you just cut yourself off at the knees. That debtor may have been able to do 200 a month. You don't know. So you want the debtor to say it first. So you'll say something like, well, tell me how much you think you can handle, and I'll see if I can fit that into a plan for you. And so that's your starting point. So the debtors, sometimes they surprise you and they might come back and say, well, I think I can do 250 a month. And you're sitting there thinking, oh my God, yeah, that's great. But never act like it's great though. Don't kick them when they're down, but you know, you want your poker face and you just say, well, let me see what options we come up with. That's a good starting point. And that's when if they can pay 250, chances are they can pay 275.
Yep.
And like Greg said, you've got a payer. Like all those wins Greg mentioned, you have a payer on the phone. So you're ending with a payment plan for sure. And you don't want to say anything negative. Thank them. Hey, that's a great starting point. Let me see how I can plug these numbers in for you. One thing you might want to do is say, I can allow you the 250 with a down payment of 300. And if you're unable to do the down payment of 300, I can give you payment plan of 280. So you're getting $30 more on the monthly payment, or you're getting 300 down right now, followed by the monthly payment. So thinking about those options and making it fun, I think it's the fun part when you have a payer on the phone. But yeah, never throw out the first number. Don't cut yourself off at the knees.
And what you just said about down payments, we are conditioned. Collections is not really that unique of a space. Like you said in the top of the call, Donna, about your credit cards, your mortgage, your car company, all those say you owe X amount and it's owed on this date. End of story, right?
Right.
We are conditioned for that. So if I want $50 a month, okay, let me see if I can work with that. Then we'd put you on like a little psychological pause, a little hold. I come back 30 seconds later and I say, okay, Mr. Jones, for me to get you $50 a month, I'm going to need X amount down. And that $50 a month will then pay your account off in 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, whatever. That X amount down might be a significant amount of money. You want a lower car payment? Put some money down. You want a lower mortgage? Put some money down.
Exactly.
So and we're conditioned as consumers in everyday life that's the way the world works. And if we wear the correct hat and say it in the same way, then we don't have to be any different in our sector whatsoever.
That's right. And negotiating, the debtor's not in the end, unless interest is accruing or something like that. But in the end, they're not paying anything more than what they owe. You're just slicing it up differently. That's all. So, you know, you can get the whole thing in full. You can do half and half. You could slice the whole thing up into even monthly payments, or you can get a down payment, take a big chunk away and divide up the rest. Make it fun. Don't say the first number. and you know, kind of hide your keep your poker face.
Yes, that's definitely the way. And fortunately for us, we don't need to worry too much about the face, at least with the standard telecommunications.
Right.
So I had a random thought, Mike. I know that you had some questions, but as far as unique training, ways that you can really instill in your collector. So this is kind of off the cuff and completely out of the office. So we mentioned earlier that a lot of the people that we're hiring or bringing in to the industry more than likely either have little to no experience in the collections to begin with, or little to no experience in potentially in sales or high level negotiating, like a car salesman or something to that effect. So a lot of the stuff is being learned cold. And I think we can all understand that a lot of people in general, and even people in collections, still have a hard time actually asking for money or actually asking for something to be given to them in return. So one of the things I've told people, just to warm themselves up, and I did this myself in my earlier career, because I came into the industry cold at my first job here, and I had to get used to the aspect of not only asking, but telling someone they owe someone. So the point is, if you have collectors who are trying to learn the job and get into the industry and be real serious about it, I would tell them, here's how you can help get yourself better at negotiations. As you're out and about in life, you see a yard sale, you see a flea market, pull up and stop. Find something really cheap that you wouldn't mind adding to your house and haggle for it. Just negotiate everything. I know you can't walk into Walmart and negotiate their prices or a store like that, but if you're going to be buying a car soon, be a hardcore negotiator. Just do it. See what it feels like. Get that feeling of asking and telling someone a certain thing that you want or need. Make it normal for you. If you're out there trying to sell something or buy something on Craigslist or eBay, what can you do to just build negotiating into a normal aspect of your life? If you travel the world at all, you know that a lot of public markets in the rest of the world, you never pay what the person tells you to pay. You'd be silly to do that. You always negotiate. And I think there's a great quote out there, something about, in business, you don't get what you ask for, you get what you negotiate. And outside the doors of the building, I know the collectors can't really take the job with them. They're not calling consumers at home or looking at files. But if you really are interested in getting better and making more money and building a career, then find every avenue in your personal life and your day-to-day world of just negotiating for everything. Someone asks you to pay X, offer lower. You need someone to pay something, start high. All these kind of things that just make this a part of your fabric, where when you come into the work, it's just your normal conversation.
And you know what, Greg, you just reminded me of something too. Let the collectors know that these techniques, they've been used on you. If you've ever bought a car, the psychological pause was used on you. And so let them know that, look, we didn't make this up. The debt collection industry didn't make this up. This is across the board. I mean, just if you're going to buy something, see how that salesman approaches you. What techniques are they using on you now that you know some of the techniques? And it kind of lets that person know that, hey, this is normal. This is how it works. And it's a good thing. And it's not just the collection industry that trains on this.
Yep. It's an ongoing practice, I think. There's an art and a science to negotiating, and few are born with it. I'm sure that there's people out there that are literally born with that in their DNA, but like myself and most people, asking for money, telling someone how something's got to be, the art of negotiating is something that just comes in time, and not just time, but pursuing the practice of it and being open-minded to it and looking for opportunities to engage in it. I have a 5 and a 7-year-old, and I have lots of fun with them, of course, and you can imagine they're bickering and fighting all the time over whose toy is this or whose turn is that. And because of this job, one of my parenting techniques now, which I'm quite proud of, is I use the thing to my daughter, Lily, if you want that, I need to hear you negotiate with your brother. Negotiate with your brother. I'm using these terms now with them because it's absolutely fascinating to watch young humans figure out the art and the science of negotiating with each other. And if I can see a 5 and a 7-year-old learn this stuff and do it in a really good way, then I should have every expectation that I am as an adult and my employees working for this company should be able to pick it up as well. It's just a matter of reminding someone, you get what you negotiate for. You want that toy back? Don't just cry and yell. Don't just take it from him. Make him an offer. Sell him on something. Negotiate with him. And they pick that stuff up right away. And you should constantly remind your staff that every opportunity you get, look to negotiate in good faith.
Excellent point.
Well, before we get to questions from the audience, and there are a few, there's one topic I wanted to bring up, and we've been talking a lot, and I'll use the analogy, we've been talking a lot so far today about the carrot, the incentive, you're going to get this off your credit report, you're going to have one less financial burden you're going to have to deal with if you pay this debt. And I'm curious if you have any advice or any insights or any perspective on, instead of using the carrot, using the stick. And that is, you know, if you don't take care of this, there is the threat, you know, of legal action being taken against you. And obviously it's got to be worded the right way. But I'm just wondering, you know, if that's a negotiating tactic that either of you either endorse or have any thoughts about.
Do you want to go first, Donna?
Sure. You know, here in Pennsylvania, there's no wage garnishment for this type of debt. And we have clients and debtors in other areas that where you can, but we just don't garnish. I think it's made us better collectors. But I think the carrot works better. And there's so many things that can be a carrot. So one, you know, if you're allowed to take it off the credit report, you know, whatever the rules are dictating, that's one. How about this? Let's get this paid off before Christmas, or you'll have this paid off before summer. Little things like that, because you're selling the benefits of paying. So anything that's a benefit that could be perceived as a benefit by the debtor, you want to use those negotiating tactics. So I'm a carrot person. What about you, Greg?
I agree 100%. And I think it's just the age that we live in. We talked a lot about what consumers are conditioned to. Well, they very quickly become conditioned to the CFPB or now the BCFP and the accessibility of making complaints and being offended or being done wrong. And I mentioned earlier that I would do everything in my power to not voluntarily give my money to someone who was trying to hit me with the stick. And when we talk about real consequences, such as legal action or garnishment, be very careful from your agency perspective and the individual collector's perspective. They should never be mentioning something unless it is absolutely certain to happen. And you want to be careful with the might or it could, because there's UDAP out there, unfair, deceptive, abusive acts and practices. That's very deceptive to tell someone, you know, someday this client, they might sue you. And if that is not ever going to happen, you should not be saying that.
Right.
If you have notations on the account that says, if this does not get paid on November 14th, 2018, it will be moved to our legal team. That's my particular office. There's a very small subset of people in this office that have the authority to make mentions of those things. If the account's been noted with a future date that says on X date and time, this account is moving to the legal department and they will pursue litigation. Until you see a note like that on the account, you should not be mentioning it at all. We might have a client that references that garnishment is going to happen on this account if it's not resolved. Then you can mention those things. But even when I am mentioning those things, I'm going to say it, not using a stick, because then again, it comes across as a threat or aggressive, maybe even that word abusive. So it is, let me tell you the facts. Let me tell you what is set to happen. Let me present you with options to help you prevent that from happening. At the end of the day, if none of that works, just give me your intentions so we know how to handle it going forward. But just be very careful about referencing legal stuff, garnishment stuff, credit reporting stuff.
Right.
Make sure it is absolutely going to happen and you are stating the truth and fact to help the consumer make a better educated decision. And keep in mind, in the forefront, least sophisticated consumer. Everybody is the least sophisticated consumer. That's the way the law was written. You have to assume they're the least sophisticated. So if I say, you know what, this client has been known to litigate, the least sophisticated consumer just heard that you're going to sue them. And if that particular file is never going to have litigation on it, then you were just deceptive to that person. And now I'm liable for unlawful violations. And in addition to that, if you have an interest in having a reputable longevity in the industry, you're just not going to last very long or have a very good time doing it if you're hitting everybody with the stick. And I don't know about you, but it sucks to talk in that capacity all day long to people that are strangers. It wears on you. It eats at your soul. So most people get a good feeling when they're business professionals and they're helpful and they actually help someone resolve a situation that is beneficial to all parties involved, not just one party involved. So from the longevity, the reputable side of things, it is better. It's lawfully better. And it just goes way better to just handle it with, in your terms, Mike, with using that carrot.
Well said.
Excellent. Well, we've got only got a couple of minutes left, but we've got a number of questions here that maybe we can try and rocket our way through. Donna, going back to something you said earlier, the question is, when you say if someone's willing to make a payment outside of that period between the 1st and the 5th, it's going to affect their payment by $5. Maybe you can talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so the collector has the liberty to know how far to push. Like I said, all we're doing is we're slicing it up differently. In the end, the debtor still owes the same amount. They're not paying any more. But if they're outside of what we want the 1st through the 5th. If the debtor is outside of that date, that's fine. The collector can authorize that. But the collector is going to negotiate a higher monthly amount. So instead of $100 a month, it's going to bump you up to, you know, 110 or 105 or whatever the collector feels that they can do. Again, we're not adding anything onto the debt. We're just dividing it up differently. So I hope that answers the question.
Yep. Thank you. I guess someone's looking for an opinion. We use the phrase, how much are you short versus what can you pay now? Does anyone have
I
any
think it's a great phrase. I think it's a great phrase, Mike. We can split hairs all day long about word choice, and sometimes it's more important than others. But the quote you just used there, I'd sign off on that any day. I probably said it myself countless times. I don't think there's a single thing wrong with it. I think it's a great twist on the perspective. It paints a different picture in the consumer's head about the actual dollars and cents. And I say, keep using it. Go for it.
Yeah, I like it too.
Another one, another person offers the suggestion. We say we can offer you a gift. I can give you the gift of a little time, or I can give you the gift of a possible discount, or maybe a little of both. Which gift would you like today?
Interesting. Never heard that before, but we've mentioned it earlier. It's not necessarily what you say, it's how you say it. So in my opinion, strictly, with hearing that for the first time, it's going to all fall down onto the specific agency's perspective, policies, tolerances, and whatnot. And for me, if I personally wouldn't train or have my staff do that, but I'm not saying it's wrong by any stretch. I would only want to make sure the people utilizing that were people who were very personable, who could build lots of rapport, who I felt wouldn't come across the wrong way, because we certainly have other collectors who are more dry on the personality or more rough around the edges, and maybe that doesn't sound so good coming from that person. So I think it's all about how it's said and who it's being said to. But if it works, there's nothing wrong with it.
Got it. Here's a question. On legal files, we request 3 months of pay stubs and 3 months of bank statements if the offer payment plan is too low in order to evaluate the file for a hardship payment. What do you think?
What type of debt? I'm curious what type of debt that is.
It just says on legal files. It doesn't go into the type of debt.
Okay. I'll let Greg answer that one since we don't have a legal.
Yeah, we definitely want to provide comprehensive answers to the listeners, but there's a lot of nuanced context in there that is not known on the surface. That's going to go down to what is literally in the policy of your agency and that client and their expectations. if that is something that you can do, then so be it. I know oftentimes with any kind of entity, if you want a forbearance or something lower, you have to prove it. Otherwise, who wouldn't be going for forbearances all day long? I love a forbearance on my mortgage, but I can't prove that I'm worthy of one, right? So there's nothing wrong.
Maybe you're just
as long
not
as
trying hard enough, Greg.
Yeah, not trying, right? Maybe. So I would just be very aware. I think the best way to sum the answer up is make sure you are in line with company and client policy. I don't think there's anything unlawful about making someone prove their ability or inability to achieve a certain payment. And if that falls in line, then that might be a good negotiating tactic to avoid having someone go into a forbearance. It's very dependent on the content there.
Got it. Greg, a question about the payment calculator that you use. That was a spreadsheet you said, right?
Yes, sir. So
is that something you developed in-house?
It certainly is something that we developed in-house, but I'm fairly certain through the world of Googling, there's probably a lot. I mean, there's infinite versions out there. We've had multiple ones that individuals have created in here, and we've just kind of went with one that universally looks and functions the best. But essentially, you're just making a bunch of formulas that say in cell A1, you put the balance. And again, just trying to come up with a visual over the speakerphone here, but in cell A2 might be two payments. So it would be the formula of balance divided, cell A1 divided by two. You know what I mean? So it would just be breaking down different cells to show what a 1, 2, 3, 4 payment plan would be per month. And again, I've not personally looked for one on Google for a while because we have a nice one we developed in-house, but the concept of it is very simple. You can go crazy with these things, which I would not recommend, particularly with frontline entry-level collectors. Simple is key. I'm sure you can Google all kinds of different little payment calculators out there. In fact, I know they exist. You can look up payment mortgage calculators and things. They're everywhere. Or a little bit of research, and it should not be too hard to develop someone with some basic Excel formula capabilities. It's really not that difficult.
Got it. Last question. Going back to what we were talking about with the carrot and the stick, with regards to large balance loans, say, where the balance is in excess of $20,000, do either of you have any ideas on what possible carrots might exist for something like that?
So the balance is $12,000. Is that right? I heard $12,000.
Or the questioner said $20,000, but just a large balance. What kind of carrot would you offer for something like that?
Well, fact-finding questions are critical. Who am I speaking to? Who owes $20,000? Are you someone that is of a certain age that could potentially have a 401k, a home equity, something along those lines that you could access? Is there a settlement on the account? Is this something that is affecting their credit report at the current time being? $20,000, that's the fun part of the game. That's a massive amount of money for most people. I'm looking at, I'm not assuming you have that in your checking account today. So we might need, and is there interest on that account as well? Because it might make more sense to take a loan from your 401k and pay yourself back if that was an option. So it comes down to someone owes $20,000. You ask them for $20,000. They say they don't have $20,000. I'm going to be going through a series of questions to figure out where they're at in life, who is in their circle of influence, what kind of income they do and they don't have, and what kind of savings they do and they don't have to come up with the best possible scenario. That's $20,000 is not easy for anyone. I don't care what anyone tells you. There's going to be a lot of work involved in figuring out how to get that paid off efficiently. That's just the way it is.
And Greg, you brought up a good point. You need to know who the debtor is and who you're talking to. Is this a 20-year-old or is this somebody that's 70? And also, don't assume they don't have it. We out here in Pennsylvania, Amish country, they have cash, and we've collected, I think the largest was $180,000. Now that's unique, but some people are sitting on a nest egg. Some people really do have the means to pay it. So just be confident when you ask. If you sound like you think they don't have it, they're going to pick up on that. But you can be very, very creative on how to get that paid. Like with all the options that Greg mentioned, part can be through savings, part can be credit card, part can be a loan. You can get pretty creative, but knowing who you're talking to is really, I think, the starting point.
Yeah, if you have a balance of several thousand dollars and a young consumer, you might, and that consumer is offering you a low monthly payment, perhaps this account's also credit reporting, perhaps there's even interest on it. A lot of people would say, why would I get a loan to pay off a balance in collections? Well, if you and say your mom could help you co-sign for a personal loan at the credit union down the street, perhaps they'd be willing to work with you and give you the payment plan that you're looking for. They'd probably get you a lower interest rate and you'd get this taken off your credit and you would build good credit off of a new established loan that you're going to be paying back.
Exactly right.
And the young consumer, the young consumer probably doesn't even know that's an option. Didn't even think about it. They looked at their checking account and saw $87 in it, and they have enough money for gas and food. But they didn't think about who's involved in my life, who cares about me. But then again, if I got the 30-plus-year-old, where are you working? How long have you been working there? What kind of savings do you have? Do you have a spouse? 401k, home equity, all that kind of good stuff comes into play. Credit card increase. Why don't you sell that third car in your driveway that's doing nothing good for you? All those kind of things will be on the table if you have several thousand dollars that are seemingly unachievable. Well, ask questions, know the consumer, give them the options that they're not thinking about. Whether they know that's an option, they didn't want you to mention it. It's our job to tell you what the options are, fill your head with ideas, plant seeds, and help you solve your problem.
Right. Well said.
Well, we've gone over our time, which was awesome. Not that we're over, but there was so much information in the discussion. Want to thank Donna and Greg on behalf of everybody listening for their insights and their time today. This webinar clearly would not have been possible without their participation. I also want to thank MicroBuilt for sponsoring today's webinar. Again, you can go to microbuilt.com to learn more about the company. Thanks to everybody who listened and who asked questions and participated today. Please stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for more news and more webinars in the very near future. And I hope everyone enjoys the rest of the day. Thank you.
Have a great day, everyone.
Thanks, Don. Thanks, Mike. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Greg.